Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How's it going? I care. I really do. If you ever want to get in touch with me and like you need somebody to care about you, you know, reach out to me on Twitter. It's at Dr. Dr. Lisa Levy SP. The SP is for self-proclaimed. So thanks for listening in. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm going to get the, you know, the chore out of the way. It shouldn't be a chore, but, you know, it's, we got to like let you know about our I'm going to tell you about our radio, our apps. We have an app. So, you know, what's great about this station? I'm just going to get this out of the way so I can talk about myself and then introduce you to our guests a little bit. Okay. So the thing is that we have this app, and it's so great because the station is so varied and various. It's kind of like having the most fascinating friend, like in on your phone at any time. Like if you're bored, you can just turn us on, and you'll never know what you're going to get. Kind of like the way your best friend probably is when you call them. Never know what you're going to get, right? So just go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android and download our app and carry us around. Think of me when you do it, okay? You can listen to my phone. It's on Podomatic and iTunes and stuff like that. So, we're going to get started in a minute, but I had this insight I wanted to share. Well, to me, it's an insight, you know, I mean, everything's an insight to me, you know, cause it's me, but maybe this will help you. You know, I got a lot of projects going on, and, this is the time of year I take on this actual paying gig where I don't get paid too much, but I do go to an office and do some kind of work that involves making things that I like. You know, it's a craft type skill. And, but you know, it really puts a log jam into my scheduling and everything else. I got to work around it. So what it does do though, folks, is really help me edit out of my life what isn't totally essential. And it does clarify for me, like, what is super, super important. And I actually have gotten two big things done in the past week. The worst chores ever. I had this fire and I had to catalog all my personal belongings. It's a long story. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. But that was horrible. Horrible. And I got it done. There you go. So, you know, mind over matter. And yet hope that inspires you, because I feel inspired by it myself. Okay. I am Gesundheit. Was that a sneeze from one of our guests?
That was a cough, yeah.
That was a cough? That's how we're going to introduce the guests today, by their
coughing.
By their coughing. Maybe somebody will burp, or I don't want to say fart, because these are classy. I have classy people on
been sneezing
here.
Sneezing a lot lately, I think.
Have you? Does allergies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Chris Rogge. So we're going to talk about this film today with the director and producer of this film. It's called Reconstructing Annie, and I'm going to tell you about it in a second, but the director is Chris Rogge. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Can you say that again?
Hello.
Okay, I was just checking the level there, making sure you were loud enough for us. And then we also have the producer, who's lovely, Bria Cole.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. She said hello. See, these people, look how friendly they are, huh? And anyway, so they made this film, which is super, super interesting, actually. And I'm going to try and explain it to you, and then they can critique how I explained it. So these two lovely, I'm going to say young people, because to me they look young. Are you guys under 30?
No.
Okay. Wish.
No. They look like they're in that very youthful late 20s, early 30s. Early 30s look. They're both very attractive. I've already quizzed them. They're taken, so forget it. And they're not dating each other. So I just want to get that out of the way, because that's the most important thing. Anyway. So they were invited, I think, or they made a documentary about another film. And the film that they made the documentary about is a really interesting film. It's called My Annie Hall. And it's produced by a couple who are actually dating, right? Yep. Elise Sachs and Matt Starr. And these guys, the people here, and Matt and Elise, they're all in the same, like...
Sorry, it's Ellie.
Elise. Oh, it's Ellie? How did I get... Well, you Ellie know, Sachs. What do I know? What do I know? I'm no expert on this. Anyway, so they all do... You guys do experimental film, right? Is that what you call it? Experimental film. You went to the New School. Documentaries, stuff like that, right? Like you're pushing boundaries. Can we say that? I got young people in here pushing boundaries. Fabulous. So anyway, the original film called My Annie Hall was a film made by this couple, and they went to Lenox Hill Neighborhood House and got genuine old people. I'm not going to say seniors because that's a euphemism, and we don't use euphemisms on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit.
I prefer elderly people or elders.
They altakakas, as us Jews say. Altakakas. Does my Yiddish sound right?
No, you got it.
I got it. Okay, so the old farts. They use old farts. And these old farts sound really, really interesting. And I encourage you, I posted the pilot of this documentary that Bria and Chris made on my Facebook page. So you can go look at it right now if you want to. But anyway, so it's a really fascinating thing that was made. And then the documentary about making it.
It's like a movie within a movie within a movie.
Okay, why don't you explain it, Bria? Because I'm all over the place on this. You explain what you did.
Well, I think it helps to go back to the original concept birthed by Matt and Ellie together. Matt started watching old movies with his grandmother. And she has Alzheimer's, and watching old movies was a way for them to participate and have a conversation and play with each other. And when Ellie heard about this, it became this workshop called the Interpretive Cinema Workshop. And they would go to Lenox Hill Neighborhood House to engage a whole community of old farts to look at old texts and like make a movie. And it turned into like a summer production of remaking Annie Hall. It was perfect. It was in the same neighborhood. It was on location. It was summertime. It's about love. It's about New York. And we have been part of that production behind the scenes, rehearsals. We were there every weekend, every production. And we have the benefit of expanding the story into each person's lives and seeing them outside the production, like what the old farts and like Matt and Ellie are like in real life and how it comes together into making this their own movie, remaking something that's New York based.
Wow. So it's kind of like, as a documentary, it has two stories. It has the story about making of the movie and Matt and Ellie, mm-hmm. Ellie's relationship. But then it also has your documentary, which is an observation of that. And by the way, the documentary is in post-production, so you must help these guys get this finished. Go to reconstructingannie.com. They're getting some help from NYFA, so if you see that, you can donate through NYFA on that website. But you should help out because this is going to be a fucking amazing documentary. So you kind of you have a meta experience, and you have a meta. So you are friends with Matt and Ellie. So you got to observe them, and then you got to observe how they worked with the actors, and then you got to observe the actors acting within themselves. So how is that?
Well, it's a challenging way of filming something, I would say. It's quite challenging to try to capture so much, especially when it was happening so quickly. And you know, we designed things so that we couldn't miss a beat. We had I mean, thanks to the volunteers and so many people were willing to hang out with us every weekend and see this through. Without them, it was absolutely not possible. I bring it up in my class. I sometimes teach filmmaking at DCTV downtown. And I bring this up where, like, it's so complicated the way that we were getting audio. It really tripped us up, which I think speaks to, like, how complicated the production was.
Oh,
so, like, where we you know, the heart of what we wanted was between takes, between their takes.
Right.
And then, but, like, we had so many mics. We had so many mics going on, so many cameras on different people that we... you know, it wasn't enough that we're like filming their production. We had to film with, you know, between their takes. So we didn't want them to cut their audio. So we like had to figure out a way to.
Wow.
So at some point, none of our technology was making that work. And we were like writing by hand timestamps of like where that ended. And so it's kind of a mess in terms of production, but we somehow kept it together with everyone's help and kept things organized. And,
And did you learn a lot of technique there?
We learned design technique. In terms of collaborating with each other, we learned, you know, different mechanisms. On the first day, in fact, we had a catastrophe, which, you know, you learn. You just learn from those mistakes, and we definitely rolled with the punches.
So as far as, like, I mean, I like to talk about relationships and people interacting with other people. So just... from that point of view, what stood out in your mind? Would it be like that? Just the thing that might have like felt emotionally loudest, was it the relationship between the old people, the relationship between the filmmakers, the relationships between the filmmakers and the old people, or what? Can you talk to like what the highlights of the interactions?
There's some peaks. It brings up this topic of like, what does it mean to update a Woody Allen film today? Which was the, you know, conflicting thing in my mind. As much as I appreciate those films and grew up with them, to give any lip service to Woody Allen at this time seemed inappropriate for me. But then when you see beyond that, we saw a real opportunity to update things.
Wait, I want to get this out because Woody Allen is a... I just want to know your point of view. Both of you, because so Woody Allen's it's an elephant in the room. Woody Allen is a controversial figure because he said some nasty shit, and he did some nasty shit supposedly. So, what about separating the art and the artist? Or what's your point of view on the whole Woody Allen thing, just briefly?
Woody Allen also becomes, when you see Annie Hall, you see Woody Allen, and a lot of his attitudes become apparent in the Annie Hall script itself. Like, you can notice things written in the script or through the dynamic of him having the interior monologue that dominates the whole narrative of the relationship, rather than giving Annie any kind of autonomy for herself. It sort of speaks for itself as in terms of like polarizing gender, doesn't take away the nervous comedy was like a brand new thing that Woody Allen brought.
Right. But also it was a product of that time.
Exactly.
Can't forget about that, right?
Right. And we are coming to this cultural conversation of when things were okay once are no longer okay now.
So are you okay with him or are you...
No.
You weren't okay with him going into making the film.
Woody Allen, I think...
But were you able to separate the art from the artist? In other words, like your respect for the... You have respect for the film. You must, or you wouldn't have done this.
Yeah, of course. To some degree, I feel I'm able to separate the art from the artist, but we have to like hold people accountable.
Right.
And I think in certain circumstances too, in Hollywood, like where people are financially benefiting from any promotion of their work, like quite literally, that's my worry that this film doesn't do that. And I don't think it has the capability to do that.
Right.
I mean, Woody Allen's churning out films every year. And we're not going to stop him.
So that would have been the
conflict. And it's not the point either, like of our film necessarily. We do want to hold him accountable as a person and his actions. But
But part of one of the ways we can do that is by understanding like the script as much as we can. And mm-hmm. when we do update it, we get to, you know, print to context things. Like, why is this behavior so bad? There are people mm-hmm. who will not understand that.
But it sounds also like you kind of were able to get past that because the film had such... The film that you were making other had such a unique qualities. And positive, extremely positive quality.
In terms of so intergenerational like it learning, it has a lot.
So
there.
It sounds yeah. to me like that was a background thing.
Also
for
you,
this project, right?
Yeah, it comes down to the process. It comes yeah. down to the process of working like with an elderly community. It could have been any film. Right. It happened to be Annie Hall was the script that they chose, and that's more the focus of Reconstructing right. Annie.
Okay, cool. So what about the relationships then? In
Oh, the point to be there made too is that Harry has never even seen Annie Hall. So
he plays
Woody Allen's character, Alvy, mm-hmm. in the movie, in the remake. And mm-hmm. yeah, he's till this day has never seen mm-hmm. Annie Hall.
So we have Matt Starr and Ellie Sachs who are co-directing, and Harry Miller and Sheila Sharnick are the actors of My Annie Hall.
Mm-hmm. The stars.
Yeah, the stars.
How many old people were in the film?
I think including the extras, there were about 12 to 14.
That's a large cast yeah, to work with.
Decent size workshop mm-hmm. class. Yeah.
How did they get along with each
other? They're amazing. They were so much fun to hang out with. Those were the best times that I had
really?
Just hanging
like,
out with
what
them,
were
not
they
stressing
like?
Out.
What were they like?
Well, we can talk about Earl.
Yeah, Earl is a big character in my mind. Yeah, do you want to talk?
No, go for it.
I mean... Earl's a tax man. He's an accountant. He lives like Upper East Side.
Is he retired? Still working?
Yeah, he's retired.
He's a very well dressed man.
Always very well dressed.
Yeah, very well mannered.
At least in his 70s. I'd say 70s. I don't want to miscalculate, but I'm not
late 70s, early 80s.
could be. I have no idea.
Okay, retirement age.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was getting a haircut in Lower East Side, and he was sitting on a bench, like, dressed to the T's, going to some acting class with a rose for the teacher. And, like,
get out.
He's quite a gentleman, and he's... And it's not just Earl. They're all very energetic, and they have a thirst for life that really flips the script on what aging means, you know, or what
really?
It means to
what,
be elderly.
What does that mean? Describe
well, it. Well, these people aren't just, you know... they're active. They're active.
So did that change your stereotype of old people? Does it seem unusual or how, what do you mean by active?
I think like in some ways, some of these elderly people are doing more with their day than I do in my own day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's inspiring that way that you can have such a busy, active, creative, art-focused life. And it really sets the tone for, like, you know, this is how spending your days can be like. It's not about mm-hmm. losing ability. I guess aging does have a connotation of losing ability or losing capacity. There's mm-hmm. a sense of loss with age.
Yeah, yeah.
But every time we met with this community, they were just giving and giving so much. And they had jokes and stories and... were game to take on anything that the production required them.
Yeah.
So they were very upbeat,
mm-hmm.
very positive.
Very outgoing. I think there's a sense in the United States, the Western world, where we, you know, we don't have value for elderly people or they don't have a place in society or something like this where I lived in Asia for 4 years. So
right,
it's quite
right, because
different.
He did a project with a Fulbright scholarship to Cambodia. But first master's degree folks.
And before I did that, I did like work with the Intergenerational Learning Center at Temple University and mm-hmm. got to learn about Asian cultures and what a strong place grandparents' role they play
right.
in the family, which is completely lost in the United States. It's like mm-hmm. shipped off to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's such a loss mm-hmm. for society. Yeah.
I would agree. Like, I even noticed that in my own life. Just seeing how much of a priority Matt and Ellie made Harry and Shula in their lives. Like, they would make sure they had rehearsals every day right before production
mm-hmm.
To serve memory. Like, this is how we can best enhance memory. And even taking the stars out for diner lunches and dinner and mm-hmm. visiting them on their birthdays. It seems sort of like you know, outward love. I definitely took for granted for like the older people in my life who are close to me.
Mm-hmm.
It made me realize in the ways that I might have taken them for granted.
Mm-hmm.
So they really showed me how to be attentive to the people who are available in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started like videotaping my grandmother.
Oh, really?
Without her
so
realizing.
Inspired you to do that. Wow.
She won't listen to this episode, so she still won't know, but yeah.
Where, when, oh, right, yes. So, because it involves the internet. So, how often do you see her? Or where does she live?
She lives up in Ottawa, Canada. I see her usually around the major holidays. But like that right. is, that right. speaks to what I'm saying is like mm-hmm. reserving family only for the major
mm-hmm.
holidays.
Mm-hmm. So working on this film changed her perspective?
In terms of, yeah, not taken for granted. Mm-hmm. She has some wild stories, like if you really
dig in there. So is this group, though, the Lenox Hill Old People Group, is that a self-selecting group? Do you think those people are a little more, like, why do people go to that group? Because this is interesting to me because I always think those old people group are for the feeblest and the feeble people go and hang out there doing their feeble crafts.
Well,
or
I mean,
what is the mission of that group is really what I'm asking, I think.
Mm.
Do you know, or maybe it's not about,
I know that.
Is it acting?
I think that's a component
it's all,
of some. The little bit that I do know about the neighborhood house, Lenox Hill, is that they've been there since the late 1800s. I know they've been like a great value to the
but
neighborhood.
But it's all old people, right?
I'm not even sure. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to mm-hmm. whether
so
or not.
It's probably a bigger organization than I'm imagining.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
They're involved in a lot of great things.
That's good to know about.
Upper East Side and
I know they have a lot of emphasis on longevity revolution. Like the longer we live, it could be like a really, really positive experience. Speaking with Jessica, who runs the Lenox Hill Neighborhood House, she's very keen on making sure that the arts are alive for people mm-hmm. who are older,
yeah.
and that arts are alive in general.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't present when Mattinelli first met her, but it makes sense to me that she mm-hmm. would be so embracing of this idea mm-hmm. because Mattinelli were actually faced with quite a bit of resistance.
Oh, really?
From
organizations that they wanted to facilitate these workshops at.
Oh, so it was really hard to find the right place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lenox Hill Neighborhood House is one of those places that is willing to take risks like that. And now you see the value that it adds.
See, that's interesting because I don't even consider that taking a risk. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like I've got a program that would be great for some old people and you expect everybody would be, yay, let's do it. But no.
I think part of it, too, maybe for what I've gathered from conversations is that Matt and I observed that Matt and Ellie are very talented at what they do. And like they were able to energize people around that workshop. Whereas I think historically in the past, organizations have tried to do those things and they usually fall apart.
Oh, because, yeah, with any group, if you're not making it exciting, I don't care. You know, children
yeah,
are probably worse.
And Ellie has a background as well in facilitating workshops using, I think, theater in prisons and other sort of.
So did you feel like the old people were limited as far as actors or were there any special? Did it feel like were you aware of like, you were working with non-professional actors? They're not.
That's correct. Uh-huh. I mean, to some extent, I think a lot of them have some experience acting
but
as well.
But not really professionals, but was it
well,
different?
No, but like Alvy, or the character Alvy, who's Harry in real life, he was a set designer for Mr. Kangaroo and I think As the World Turns.
And Guiding Light.
For Guiding Light.
Yeah.
Right. So he was used to seeing acting, being around acting.
He's been around, a lot of.
Yeah, and Schuller has like comfortably been performing as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
And they're
being
all involved
camera
in the arts while at Lenox Hill as well. They're paint. That's part of what we show in their daily life is, taking free classes at NYU, which I think still exists at a certain age for New York residents. They're taking advantage of all of that. They're painting. They're taking photographs. This is we're not joking. They are.
No, I'm hearing you.
Definitely more active than
I am. Are they in touch with current contemporary culture? I mean, that's another stereotype I have about
contemporary
old people.
Cu-
Yeah, like are they aware about Roseanne and all this stuff, and have they heard of Kanye West?
Email's a little tough. Like, it's been tough.
Yeah. So they're not
technologically. So, if I'm making observation technologically, yeah. I mean, you know, they're not tweeting. Uh-huh. But you know who's tweeting that?
Harry will email, and it's like the most well composed email. I mean, he's, like, sincerely, Harry Miller.
Right. 4 years older than my grandmother, and you know my grandmother won't use a computer, so this is this is rare. I mean, in my experience,
right.
But yeah, they definitely do not live their lives on the internet. They're very out in public space, meeting other people.
Which is another level to this, because I think this is, you know, something that doesn't work for us millennials. Like. How much we may be on social media. So, you get to see the opposite of that.
So what did you see? How old were you guys when you got Instagram, Facebook? How old? Like high school?
I was like the first on Friendster.
And what year was that? I mean, were you in high school?
Or no, what? I was the second. I was a junior in college.
Oh, so you're not. Yeah, that's not that.
I was in AIM chat rooms. At
MSN Messenger.
You're obviously precocious and technical. You guys are, you know.
But that was normal. That was like 1995, 96, like AOL dial up. So
that was
like preteen ish. Like,
right, but it's not rule. It doesn't rule the world.
Yeah, we're the first generation to remember like a childhood without.
Right. Or the last generation. You're the last generation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's perspective there. But so what do you
Zennials, you can go.
what makes so what do you think is different? Like did it make you more aware of how social media and the phone and all that stuff controls your lives?
There's a convenience that comes with it for sure.
And it certainly shaped social things.
It has.
Because,
Because you can't, like, now we live on the fly, just figure things out. But with working with Harry and Shula, if we wanted to meet up with them, we'd have to communicate 5 days in advance and, like, arrange times to be on the phone. And it was a lot more intentional. And you made an appointment and you didn't break it.
Uh-huh.
So that was something that was very
Was that, like, concrete?
You know, it's like, I mean, that's the, I remember what it's like having to meet somebody somewhere, like on a street corner at a certain time. And if you weren't there... You didn't see that person. Like.
Sure, I remember losing a friendship that way because I had to work late. No kidding.
So
I'm sorry.
They're still living that very much. I think that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
About physical? But it could also speak for how busy their lives are. They are thinking ahead. They are filling their week before they leave it.
Yeah.
Right. And how about physical limitations? Did they seem very physically limited? Did they get tired? Were they not able to?
I think with any person, like you had to think about how stressful a production environment can be, even for an able body, whatever age it is, it can be very taxing.
Without even putting it into some age perspective, it's like just those summer days that we started production on were very hot.
Like 90.
Yeah. Like 90, you know, in the heat in New York.
You got popsicles and they melted immediately.
We learned on the first day of production that Harry had a pacemaker, which interferes with audio. then you start to realize how, I know Matt, especially Matt, felt a huge onus on a responsibility for people's well-being and health. While he's stressing out like a Jew, like I was stressing out a lot about, but he was specifically stressing out about that and worried about that, you know, about like Harry's, hot out, you know?
Yeah. He actually lops that to make sure that he had a portable fan that could be ready at any time.
That's pretty awesome. But I guess that's true in a certain way when you're working with, I mean, I don't think about it, but I guess if you're a director, producer, you would naturally think about that with any, especially non-professionals, because there's a certain stamina that any actor has to have to be on a movie set, right?
Yeah.
And if you're dealing with non-professionals of any sort, they don't necessarily have that sort of stamina.
Yeah, and that's true.
So you'd have to think about that with...
There were a lot of professional... I would say there was several professional people on set, like that, you know, that understand that. But there were also a lot of volunteers that were working with us because this was an exchange of, you know, opportunity and experience.
Yeah.
But managing that becomes stressful. Mm-hmm. Like,
mm-hmm. How did you feel about Ellie and Matt? Did you learn stuff? Was there anything like where you thought, oh, you know, that they were pushing them, or that, how did you feel, or that they were more sensitive? Did you learn, how was that? Like, did you learn stuff from them, good and bad? It doesn't have to be all good. It can be good. It can be mostly good. It can be a little good.
are you talking about how they ran the set?
How they ran a set, really.
I think they were very prepared. I was just going to add a minute ago, while production's really hectic, it was very clear by the schedule that they built that was within capacity. There would often be notes about, like, who's arriving when and, like, what to watch out for. We were privy to those notes because we needed to coordinate our productions with theirs. Mm-hmm. So I think that they were incredibly diligent, and they also worked with really good producers who, it wasn't even a question. It was like a non-issue. Like, this type of diligence was going to be part of the production.
Mm-hmm. So they were really experienced, it sounds like.
First film.
No, I mean, that's their first film, but they... Yeah, echoing everything that Bria just said, they came to the table correct and really aligned themselves with professional people.
So they knew how to be experienced in a way. They knew how to, mm-hmm. they knew what to look for. They may not have done it, but they've been on sets. They knew what they
were. Yeah, no, so and you know, that's not entirely true. Like, they have filmmaking, like Matt has filmmaking experience. Ellie has like stage experience. Mm-hmm. And I think the combination of the two, for the first like, short film of that magnitude. They did a fantastic job.
So have you maintained relationships with any of these old people? Or, I mean, it's a big, I mean, not that you would necessarily, but.
They're
actors.
No.
or whatever. You know, I know a set.
I mean, it's more
over,
part of my practice. Like when I collaborate, it's a collaboration really with social actors or filmmakers to make a documentary, and those are people that are in your life forever.
Oh, right. Because you're making a documentary.
I may not see them every week, but...
So did you feel like you were making a documentary about, like, there must be a balance then? Was the documentary about Ellie and Matt, or was it about the old people more? Was it where was the balance?
It's distinctly about the process, I think. It's about... it is, in its sense, a true making of film where it's behind.
We do like focus on each of the four characters to get to know them and their histories.
Meaning the two directors and the stars. Is that what you mean by the four?
Yeah.
So there's two actors and two directors.
Yeah, we do become very interested in
They're
each
all
one
our
of them.
Actors.
Yeah.
right.
Because what happens on set that is worthwhile is they constantly are teaching each other and commenting on each other. So, you know, Sheila has incredible world experience, and she will say something really interesting on set, and we're like, whoa, what's that about? And even still, trying to pin her down for a conversation, we don't get the full story. But we do try to spend time with each person to get more depth to what we're observing on set.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. We hang out with Harry at his house. He shows us a lot of, talks stories about his life, interesting work, you know, in design on sets. And we take trips with like Shula to Governor's Island.
Wow.
And she likes to go there for environmental like reasons and activities and stuff. And it's fun to get to learn about folks on camera.
Did you forget that you were with old people when in those situations? Or no? Maybe not.
I'm not sure if I ever put...
Like you're with peers at any point or...
Kind of.
No. I definitely, no. Shula. I was definitely put my place. No, oh. I was never going to be at Sheila's level.
Oh.
Sheila? Why? She sounds a little arrogant, maybe.
Not arrogant. She's just very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And she lets you know. But they were also wanting... Okay.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. I mean, I like that. Personally, I like have fun, you know, like hanging out with her. She's fun. I think she... We talk... Actually, maybe I disagree.
Maybe you
like,
got along with her better.
I don't... Well, we just like get into, you know, things about life and stuff. We've had talks that were like deeply meaningful. She's curious about like my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's genuinely curious about my experiences. So in that sense, you know, I guess it's not like a... You know, it's like having a peer who's an elder, and that is something that is just so normal that you don't have to really think about. Mm. And like,
so do you think you both as individuals have different relationships with old people? Do you think it comes from your grandparents?
It's possible, yeah.
So you both have living grandparents, right?
I have one living grandparent left. Yeah,
and what's awesome. It's a grandmother.
Yeah, I call her my Oma.
Your Oma,
she's awesome.
She's from Munich, but yeah, she lives outside Miami now.
Uh-huh. And you're really close with her. I can see, folks, his face lights up a little. He loves.
She's like my favorite person in the world.
This is so sweet. It's so sweet. You must. Sheila must have gotten a taste of that. And how about you, Bria?
You have
your grandmother in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I have 8 sets of grandparents.
Oh.
So like every grandparent.
8 sets of living grandparents?
Well, some are living and some are not.
Oh man, that's way too many.
Yeah. So like having older people in my life was very present at all times. It was every my parents' parents both divorced and remarried, so it's really made a huge extended family. Where it's awesome.
You like that?
No, it's such interesting people in different towns.
So you like the old people, but do you see them? There must be so many of them. Like Chris has a chance to really get to know his grandmother because that's all he's got. But you, how do you do with, you know, maybe you didn't get to be that close intimately with any particular one.
Well, it was the very first grandchild. So I think that might have like put me in a different light. Like I have to be more successful or something like that. I don't know.
And they put pressure on you.
A little bit, yeah.
Really? Like, what do you mean?
Well, my brother's younger than me, and he's on his second house right now.
Jesus.
And
what does that mean? Buying his second? He owns 2 homes? What do you mean?
He sold the first, and he bought his second.
You mean he flipped it?
You made it sound like he had 2 houses. That's not fair.
No.
I see. The real truth is Bria's very hard on herself, and she's hardworking. That's what's going on here.
And you're more easygoing.
Perhaps.
Because you got more reinforcement. Jewish boy. You're like my brother. See, I'm projecting this right onto you.
Well,
see, that's how it goes. Anyway, let me tell you about Radio Free Brooklyn again, because it's a great radio station. It is so fabulous. And you're listening to it right now, and you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm giving a shit right now about Chris Rogge and Bree... I'm going to call there. I got it right off the right, my head off, right off the top of my head. And we're talking about the Meta documentary they made called Reconstructing Harry about,
Reconstructing Annie,
Harry, about a remake of Annie Hall with old people by another couple. And they made the documentary about the Annie Hall movie.
Yeah.
That's all I'm telling you. If you can't get it by then, you got to start from the beginning on this. So anyway, why don't you go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate and give us some money. Give us some money because, you know, the government is slashing everything and we need to, like, get our voices heard, for God's sakes. At least I need to get my voice heard. This is what I'm doing. So anyway, I want to hear back from you too. So it's a two-way street. So how's your feeling about getting old? What do you guys, individually, what do you think about getting old? What do you think about? Are you afraid of it? Do you feel like it's never going to happen?
I'm not afraid of death, but I don't want to get old.
Like what's your fear? I don't want to get older.
Maybe those typical stereotypes we're trying to smash with this documentary, like that it's, how did you put it? You said, you can't, you're not active, the opposite of being active, or just like
passive.
Yeah, passive, or not having capacity, I think is what you said. Those things are frightening.
So you're afraid you're going to just turn into like a disheveled, decrepit old guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And does your experience with your grandmother, is she a little bit...
She's active. She inspires me, actually. She recently broke her hip and had surgery.
Wow.
She's like... How old? 93. She was born in 28. And she recently lost her husband. My grandfather died of dementia a couple years ago. So
was he in his 90s?
He was not. He was in his late 80s. Yeah. He was younger.
Old, but old.
Yeah.
Died old.
Sure. Yeah, that's like pretty old. I don't really know if I want to live that long, to be honest. But yeah, I think like, you know, it's.
You don't get to choose.
I'm still, yeah. You don't get to choose. That's the thing. That's what bothers me. And it's just going to happen either way. And I don't like that lack of control.
Mm-hmm. There's also like, lack of control. I mean, is that part of what it's disturbing?
Well, you know, I'm vegan now, so I'm preparing myself. I'm getting ready for this. Yeah.
Do you think like, do you think about that? Do you think like, am I taking good care of myself so I'll age well?
No, I think my generation was scammed and I better prepare for my future because we won't have those protections.
Screwed, yeah. Right. Is there anything about what like, you know, I mean, you guys are full grown adults. So is there anything like if I said, so what do you worry about aging now? Would you say like, oh, I saw some gray hair or there's a wrinkle? Is there anything you feel like you're aging?
You're not aging yet. See, Bray is a little younger than me.
Oh, he deflected. Yeah. He deflected. This is you can't deflect. I'm on this.
I am the one getting gray hairs. That's true.
Do you worry about that? Are you like conscious of it?
Well, I think it's easier for men, right? Because I can just like shrug it off, I guess.
No.
But like, it does bother me.
Can you?
To me, it's a signal of me losing control of aging or youth.
Yeah. 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 And how about you, Bree?
What was the question again?
I'm saying, I'm asking you if there's anything, well, I was asking you if you're afraid of getting old, and then I guess we got into, answer that, and then I want to know if there's anything that you personally see about aging in yourself.
I actually haven't pictured myself older at all, which I think might be an act of denial. But yeah, like, wrinkles, like Bandy, like I do buy the anti-wrinkle cream.
You do? You do? That's so interesting.
I do. And I'm totally duped by the system of like Forever Beauty.
So do you worry about physical, you worry about losing your looks?
Sure. But I look at the older woman in my life and like how that they have embraced it and how graceful they look. So I look forward to that. They're in great shape. They have great bodies. And they have a full head of hair. And I kind of like feel like that's my insurance. Like my genes are signing me up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vanity is the biggest thing. But I haven't thought about losing control because I feel like I still need to learn how to take advantage of my youth still.
Really? What do you mean?
Like doing everything possible with my day. I don't think I take advantage of enough.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. And you're probably, is she really busy all the time?
I don't know what she's talking about. She's so busy.
Yeah, right? Because she's paranoid. You've got to she has not enough self-esteem. She definitely doesn't. I don't know about you, Chris. I'm not sure. You might be okay.
I'm the typical self-deprecating Jew,
No, but you might be okay. This Bree person needs some more self-esteem, though.
Okay, I'll buy that with my anti-wrinkle cream.
But you know what? The thing is, maybe that's also pushing you and, you know, helping you with your overachievingness. Is Bree an overachiever a little bit? or you both are very ambitious, the two of you.
I think we share ambition.
Yeah. We met in grad school together.
Yeah. So you're both very ambitious, push each other. That's how come you work together. You know, I want to point out here that it's actually really interesting, the stereotypes that you both have fulfilled. When I asked you about how you look.
Poor filmmakers?
About how you're worried about aging, because why Chris here is a little worried about losing control and being decrepit. You are worried about, you, Bree, are worried about your physical beauty.
And maybe this is why we make art, is to like teach ourselves to not be part of the culture that we inherit.
Right. But isn't it, don't you find it really, I find it really interesting because, you know, this is something that bothers me as an old lady, and I'm in my 60s. Did you know that? I'm in my 60s. Everybody that listens to the show more than once knows that, because I can't shut up about it. I'm not going to hide it. But, the thing is that with feminism over the years, I have under the topic of feminism, women have gotten worse about being worried about their appearance, not better. And I'm really, really disappointed in all of us because of that and the pressure that women have to look good and look good. So, I just want to put that out there so we can all get a little more awareness on that.
Absolutely. There is also like a great deal of body positivity and like appreciating, like while I may look young, I have like a scar over my lip and like some freckles, and like I see those as like positive beauty attributes. I don't see them as defective. And if I was still mired in their conventional ideas of beauty, I would not consider myself beautiful by that, you know?
Right. But I also think that women are being held back by their focus on physical appearance, because it's kind of, we shouldn't all be required to carry that banner of having to be good looking at a certain standard, like that we are just like, and body positivity actually drives me crazy. The concept, because it's saying, I feel good about my body, but it still has a defensiveness to it. And we shouldn't be, I mean, ideally.
That's a good point.
Ideally, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying I'm any better. I mean, God knows my hair's colored, for God's sakes. But don't go to Texas with red hair. They can't shut up about it, by the way. So I'm just saying, you know, I'm just trying to, I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just, or that I don't get, I'm not, that I don't give a shit. I'm just saying, you know, we got to get past that because we want, it's holding us back. So Chris, you have a girlfriend, right? How long have you been with your girlfriend?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Should I ask her?
Yeah.
It's a commitment issues here, I can tell. So does she, what about her, what about, does she, do you feel like she worries about getting old, her physical appearance, or what's your perspective from knowing her?
If I'd like enthusiastically say no, is that bad? no, she actually, though I think it's easy for her to be beautiful, like she doesn't, I don't think she actually does place such an emphasis on physical beauty. Like, I think she maybe used to, but I think as she's getting older, I think she's really focused on other things in life that like bring her happiness.
And she's already like hooked up, so she doesn't have to worry about finding a guy.
Sure.
You know, that's true. That's because women, right? I know women that over time they have a really hard time giving up trying to attract men if they're not in a relationship at any age.
Yeah, well, the one thing I just want to add, like, joking about physical appearances and all, my mother actually was, like, an incredible role model in terms of, like, she is self-sufficient, like, she can fell a tree,
wow,
like, cut wood, repair a car, she worked in tobacco fields. When we first started wearing makeup, it was, like, mascara that was like the same color as your eyelashes. Like, she was not interested in putting forward any idea that you needed to enhance your looks. I think where I'm coming from in terms of like skin is just like skin is a sign of time passing, but it's also like I smoke, I drink, I don't take care of myself. So like I'm trying to do a little magic eraser on like how I'm taking care of myself.
Oh my God, a smoker. I don't think I've had one of those in here. And you know, I can't even imagine. That's so old school.
This is California.
Yeah.
So you smoke cigarettes.
Amsterdam Shag.
What's that mean?
It's a rolly. Anyway, but point being is like, to what Chris is describing, like, of his girlfriend and other people, like, just like how you fill your day is like what's most important. Like, you can be beautiful by your actions. Like,
oy. That sounds idealist. I'm way too. No, thank you for saying that. And I get it. I'm just going to say, but like, Lisa, I'm way too cynical for that.
That's why you're here. This is beautiful and beautiful show.
Oh, right? Shut up. Shut the fuck up. What was I going to say? So Bree smokes. That's interesting. So Chris, do you see Bree smoking a lot? What's your thoughts on that? Does she?
I think it's a terrible habit. Yeah.
And have you guys
not innocent?
Do you smoke too?
I.
You bum a cigarette off of her.
Never.
Occasionally.
Yeah, he bums all the time.
Does he smoke regularly?
I mean, like he's really good at shaming people for the same things that he does himself.
Really, that's so annoying. Jesus.
It's so annoying.
So annoying. And he's laughing.
But I'm vegan now, so.
No, you know what? I don't even buy that now. I don't even trust you on being vegan. Right. I don't know. So
you can cheat, that's the trick sometimes.
See, isn't that funny? So that's because your grandmother loves you and you feel like whatever you have such a much, you are so, you guys are really, really different in your levels of self-acceptance, I think.
Well, I've only got to know you just now.
I know. I'm just a, you know, I mean, I have no formal training. I just spew what I think. I don't know anything. I'm not pretending I do. No, I think you have really different levels of self-acceptance. So can I ask if that comes up? Do you agree with me? Does that make sense? I mean, I think it's typical male-female stuff, too. Did you get along with your family, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to complain about my family.
Did you get a lot of reinforcement?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents thought you were doing...
My parents told me I could do anything I ever wanted to do.
See,
like a proper Zennial.
Jewish, I'm sorry. It's like my brother. My parents hated me and they loved my brother. They thought he was God. So I'm just projecting, but that's okay. So we're still friends, right?
Of course. What? Yes.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
I mean, we're getting to be friends. We're still going to be friends after this.
Yeah.
Okay. So Bree, what kind of, did you get, how were your parents with you? Were they like not good enough or were they like, that's great? Or what kind of encouragement? Well, your parents were divorced.
Yeah, I mean, that was later in life. My parents are great.
Did they encourage you?
Yeah, I think they found, like, it helped me find things that I really like to do. And
did you have a hard time finding things that you like to do? What do you mean by that?
I think, like, yeah, I know. Like, my parents were really young. Like, my mom was 23. My dad was 22 when they had me. I was the first child. So I think, like, a lot of the things growing up for me as a child were, like, much more challenging for a lot of reasons that I'm not going to mention here. But
because your parents were too young to handle it.
Well, they dealt with more than just having a child. You know, like, I was hospitalized at a really young age. And, like they had
you
to
had
learn.
Obstacles.
They had huge obstacles as parents. Yeah. So I think like I had the framework of like a lot of like hard work and like seeing
things
through.
Well, that makes for great art. That's my husband, because I had a lot of obstacles as a kid. And now my husband is also an artist. He's jealous of me for having that because I'm old enough. It doesn't matter anymore so much because...
Yeah,
but how about you?
I mean, I look back on it like, actually, I look back on it like, wow, that whole corporate experience was the obstacle.
What do you mean? Did your parents...
Like not having any real challenges and having a sterile upbringing, uh-huh. though it's what boohoo, like what am I complaining about? But like looking back retrospectively on that, it sort of like gives perspective, I think. Like,
oh, please. So now we're both, I feel like we're ganging up on you, but I can't help. Now we're jealous of you. We're like, oh, your life is so fucking good. It sucks, man. You have no idea. You've got it made. But you went to Cambodia to find out how difficult life was, right? I mean, partly. I mean, maybe. Did you get a perspective there? You know, sure. More. You know how life can suck more than most of us.
I won't speak for the people. I certainly think that
we have 4 minutes.
Developing world here in America, but yeah.
So tell me one challenge that would people in Cambodia have? Like what should we be grateful for?
Well, I don't know the latest statistics, but you know, more than half the population lives on less than $1 a day.
So. Right, but what does that look like? What did you see there?
Well, you know, actually it looks like a lot of happiness sometimes. People can be happy in their life without material things.
What? Liar.
Yeah. There's a great meme I love that came out a couple years ago, and it's just like, it's in Africa, there's some kids dancing in the mud or rain, I think. And it says like, in Africa, every 60 seconds, a moment passes. It's just like,
so you saw like what good values are, that they come from like other humans and not owning crap.
Yeah. Saw
right?
a lot
crap
of things
gets in the way, right?
That maybe gave me perspective on like a corporate, you know, kind of upbringing.
That's interesting how you refer to your upbringing. Were you from a solidly upper middle class family? Like what, Bree? Go on.
I mean, I wouldn't say that.
What?
I mean,
it's not.
Does your father own an oil company or
something? No, it's not. It's nothing like that.
What?
No, but my dad works for Bristol Myers Squibb. So growing up, they work in the agricultural industry and then pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, my parents are working class. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to college.
They didn't.
Yeah. So they've worked hard their whole life, what they have, but it was definitely in a very corporate context in Princeton, New Jersey.
Oh, because they were part of a corporation that took care of them. Well, I don't know. I'm going to give you a pass on the corporate thing. I think that you had a lot of corporate culture, but so you had stability and you had health insurance, but I don't think that's necessary.
I think maybe it's more like suburban America.
Mm-hmm.
Family connection, I think, is lost in a sort of sterile everyday life of corporatism.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, you guys seem like you're from complementary backgrounds in a way, and I think that I can see how you would make a good team. From my point of view, I mean, shit, I've known you less than an hour. Well, you got here a little early, so I've known you an hour, and I would say I could see as two artists how you would be good collaborators and probably really good at presenting stuff too, I imagine. You know what I mean? Like if I had $1 million to give to a documentary film team, I could see you guys trying, you know, definitely I'd take you seriously. So, but since you don't have a $1 million team, I want to make sure that everybody goes to their website, reconstructingannie.com.
Yeah.
And give them some money. Give us some money, but whatever you have left over, give it to them. Because we need to stay on the air every day, all day. And they you know, they're young people. They're going to get money from somewhere because they're just these bright young people. Yeah, do it. Okay, that's good marketing. Do it for the old people. And I also want to make sure that you stay and listen to my friend Elon Danziger right after this. He had somebody who has been on my show, Courtney Fallon. I'm not going to get her name right. Courtney Frances Fallon, and very, very awesome, interesting young lady. And I might wind up listening myself because I want to see what else she said to him that she didn't say to me.